Hello, everybody, and welcome to the very first Super Podcast episode of 2016. I'm your host, Super Marcy. Yes, I'm back. I'm back.
She's back, Heather.
Yes,
back in black.
I'm here, and I'm hosting, and all is good in the world. Well, some parts of the world. And I'm joined by co-host, the one and only, he is absolutely terrible, Bede Jermaine. Hello, Bede.
Hello, Marcy. How are you?
Not bad. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. Not too bad. Just, I had a pretty busy couple of weeks, Marcy, since the last time we recorded a show. So, like, with Christmas and New Year, and I had my cousin coming to visit me as well, and...
Delighted matches and Kupka very much.
I know. And it is, yes, if anyone's wondering, yes, it's the same cousin I mentioned years ago on that infamous Eat, Pray, Love episode, so...
And I'm disappointed I didn't get to see her this time.
Yeah, well, we were very, very busy. Like, had
she's
a...
quite awesome, and she's very funny.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And, yeah, well, we just had a lot to do, Marcy, so we never sort of really stuck around sort of Essendon way because there's so much to do around.
Well, your new place.
Yes, exactly. I have to give you the grand tour.
Yes. Anyway, we are also joined by our other co-host. He is a very powerful man with the dark side of the Force. It is Chris Wren.
Yes, I would definitely say that.
Hello.
How are we?
We're okay. How are you?
Excellent. Until I throw a massive temper tantrum for no good reason. Thus Force creating the most hilarious moment in the entire Star Wars franchise.
Exactly.
Thanks for that.
And you can tell that Kylo Ren is, I won't say it just yet,
well,
because, well, what, that's...
This podcast is, we'll go into it. This is our...
There will be spoilers.
Yes, it is our podcast. I can hear myself through your mask. it is, this is our, I don't know what number we're up to, but this is our The Force Awakens episode, and there will be lots of spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie by now, yeah, why the hell not?
It's probably those one or two people who still haven't seen it, Marcy.
Yeah. But yes, this is The Force Awakens episode. Yeah, we were kind of going to record it a couple of weeks ago, but, you know, it's Christmas time, New Year's, cousins visiting, so we are now doing it now.
Yes, exactly. And I think it's probably the best time to kind of do it right now because, you know, the movie's been out for a few weeks. Practically nearly everyone on the planet has seen it, and even if
and pretty sure it's the highest grossing movie ever.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, and also, you know, there's a lot of stuff we... You know, that's already in the public consciousness at the moment that we'll dive into for this episode. Because,
yeah,
you know,
well, now that we've all seen it more than once and we've had some time to sit on it, I think it's a good time to get into it. I mean, a lot has been said about it, good, bad. Fans are just in uproar about every little bloody thing to do with the movie, or people are praising every little thing. It's just all over the place. It's Star Wars mania. So now's as good as any time, but before we get started, Bede, why are you a terrible Australian for this episode of the podcast?
Oh, Marcy, let's see.
I throw in a theory?
Yes.
He watched the Star Wars Christmas special willingly.
No, the theory is he kept Han Solo carbonite, frozen in carbonite, on his wall in his palace for so long.
Yes. That's what made me a terrible for this week. But unfortunately, though, but it's serious, though. I'm a terrible Australian because I have seen Kurt Cameron Saving Christmas.
Yeah, unfortunately, I've seen bits of that, and wow, is it terrible.
Well, I'll say this, Marcy. I think when you sort of hear so much about a movie, like, especially one that has a reputation as being one of the worst of all time, and whatnot. You kind of think, is it really the worst of all time, or is it kind of over-exaggerated? You know, like how, you know, a lot of movie fans out there could be, something even has to be the best thing ever or the worst thing ever. So when I went into this film, which I did watch as part for my...
Your bad movie treat-a-thon for Christmas.
Yes, indeed. And let's just say it was an experience. Let me just put it that way.
It really is one of the worst things you can sit through.
Marcy, it's pretty much is an educational film. That's what basically is. And clearly, Kirk Cameron has no idea about at least some of the traditions, aspects of Christmas originated from. Like, I'm just sitting there thinking to myself, like, you know, I've heard, like, you know, some things, you know, you've heard of, and other things are like, what the hell is he even talking about? I've never heard of this shit. It just sounds like...
Pretty much, the movie, let's put it this way, if...
Wait, aren't we here to talk about Star Wars? Why aren't we talking about Star Wars?
Because it's the bad movie section of the podcast.
No! Don't paint this beautifulness with your horribleness.
It's not our horribleness. We are saying how bad this is.
Indeed. What?
This movie is the equivalent of a propaganda film.
I would say that.
Joseph Goebbels was a Christian fanatic living now. This is the kind of movie he would have commissioned.
I wouldn't say like that because I have watched the whole thing. Like I can see what you mean, but watching the film, it's just a really strange experience because you got all that stuff, but then you have these like side characters in the film that's kind of almost unintentionally kind of making fun of the people that this film is made for. And it's weird though because like it's so bizarre. And then the film just ends with this like 20-minute long sort of dance sequence, and it has like. Which I did put up on our awkward pauses Twitter account. It's just basically Kirk Cameron does the worm, but it looks like he's humping the floor. It is the most disturbing thing I have ever seen in my entire life.
No one, do yourself a favor, never watch this movie. It is a piece of crap.
It is Kirk Cameron's The Room, basically, except just not as... hilarious as that.
You'll be less offended watching, you know, a Hitler speech.
I wouldn't go that far, but...
I would go that far.
Well...
Hey, Chris is pulling his what hair he has on his head out. He's got very short hair.
Yes, so we might as well move right along, though.
We'll move right along.
I will say this. If anyone wants to know what I was like while watching the film, just go find my bad movie tweet-a-thon of it, and you can read the hilariousness of me as I was watching the film. So, there you go. There's a plug for me. So,
yeah.
Moving right along.
We're here to talk about Force Awakens, Episode 7 in the Star Wars saga. It is the first movie in a brand new trilogy. And I don't want to wait for the next one, but we have to because that's how things work. Yeah, so I'm going to go to IMDb and read the synopsis because that's what we do on this podcast. All right. 3 decades after the defeat of the Galactic Empire, a new threat arises. The First Order attempts to rule the galaxy and only a ragtag group of heroes can stop them, along with the help of the Resistance. That's the movie. All right. I'll get right into it. The movie, as it starts off with the opening crawl, it tells us that Luke Skywalker has vanished. He's nowhere to be seen. No one knows where he is, but there's rumors and talk of a map. Someone has a map to Luke Skywalker, and General Leia wants to get her brother and help them to help the Resistance in the fight against the First Order. And she sent her best pilot, which is Poe Dameron, to collect the map on Jakku. And the First Order after the map as well. And that's pretty much how we get into the movie. What is that bunny doing? It's got a new bunny and she's trying to eat her cage. I know a lot of people are saying how similar this is to A New Hope. But let's get something straight. What sets the events of A New Hope is the plans to the Death Star. Now, the plans to the Death Star what they contain, how they can defeat it, that comes into play in the third act of the movie. The thing here is the search for Luke Skywalker, and then there's the map. This does not come into play until the very end of the movie. The whole thing with the map is basically the MacGuffin to get everything rolling for the movie, and I think that is a huge difference between this and A New Hope already. I think they basically have a very similar structure, but when you get down to the nitty-gritty, it's all very different. So the opening of the movie, Ron Jakku and Poe Dameron gets a map from Max von Sydow. We don't really know who this character is, but we understand that he's old enough to have been around to have seen the Clone Wars and all of that. How he's got the map, we don't know. That could be something for a comic or something, a book, who knows. And Poe puts it in BB-8 because he pretty much has no other choice, otherwise the First Order is going to get it. And BB-8, being that he's a fast little robot, can get...
Droid
can get the fuck out of there. And so that's how that starts, and he just happens to stumble Rey later on. Yeah, so that's the start of the story, and that pretty much sends everyone on their way. In the Star Wars universe, coincidences and things are always very common. These things happen. The Force could be at play for a lot of things. There's a lot, there's so many things that can factor into how these events play out. And I think saying that it's lazy doesn't cut it as a complaint, because you watch the original trilogy, it's full of that. And this is just, it's got different things that happen, but we all know that in this universe, things are always connected. Things definitely happen because they're supposed to, or they need to. That's my beginning rant. Who wants to elaborate more, Bede?
Oh, well, I'll let Chris go, because I know he'll have a lot to say.
No, I'll go on forever. You go.
Well, I'll just sort of give my overall thoughts of the film. I think it's I do really enjoy the film a lot, and I think it does a good job at sort of like, reestablishing the Star Wars franchise, not just for fans, but also for newcomers as well. And the kind of sort of, and the fact that, it is, the first kind of the sequel to Return of the Jedi is kind of thrilling, because we get to see, our old favorite characters that we haven't seen in like 30 odd years. But at the same time, what I really love is that the film sort of does a good job with, from the very beginning, sort of establishing all the new characters. Like, all the sort of the older characters that we know and love, like, Han Solo and Leia and Chewbacca, they don't really sort of come into play until about, say, the halfway point of the film. If anything, the first two-thirds of the film is just pretty much introduces these new characters who are all great. Like, every single one of them is just well-defined and just well-crafted, and the film sort of does that. And I think that what I really loved about the film is that it's a good way to, instead of just showing us the original characters, we got these new ones who are so good. You got Rey, played by Daisy Ridley, who's just great. So, like, this is pretty much, like, she's practically the definition of an unknown. Like, she did, like, little bits and pieces here and there, like, an appearance on TV or a short film, but this is, like, her first big major role. And I can understand that, because she is sort of the main character of this film, and it would be daunting for any actor kind of, stepping into any blockbuster and to kind of be, the lead, but she does such a great job in the film. And also John Boyega from Attack the Block is also equally good as well, and I love the sort of the arc that his character has been from sort of being originally being a First Order stormtrooper and then realizing that what they're doing is wrong and then having to go on the run and try to and just sort of get away with him, but then at the same time having to put aside his fears and all that to help out and sort of to help the resistance. And even though he wasn't in the film as much as I thought he was going to be, but Oscar Isaac does a really good job as Poe Dameron, and also like Adam Driver, who I was kind of skeptical at first, but him being sort of like the villain in the film, but he does a really good job, and also he's got a very interesting and complex villain as well. And but everyone sort of for most part does a really good job with their performances, and it's also great to see, you know, Harrison Ford and Carrie Fisher back playing Han Solo and Leia, and you could tell that there's still something there, and they just so good. And yeah, there's so much to like about it. There's some great, it's really well directed. There's some great sequences, and it kind of has, it's still, and to me, it's what's important is that it has the sort of the feel of a Star Wars film, like that sort of, you know, that sense of adventure and fun, and like all the previous films have in their own. And this film does that extremely well. And also, like, I do have some, I don't think it's entirely perfect, but we can get into that a little bit later. But for most part, I think it's a really fun, really great film that, you know, it's, you know, Star Wars is back, and, you know, it's pretty much as, has pretty much, you know, swept the entire world. And if anything, it's just a great film. I've seen it a couple of times now, and I mean, there's so much to talk about it, but we'll get to like sort of the more specifics of the film and all that during this podcast.
And Chris,
well, I loved it.
All right, that's it. See ya.
That's it. Yeah. look, it's a great film. I mean, considering it's coming from a filmmaker that, to be honest, I was never a huge fan of. I mean, I enjoy JJ as a producer and writer. I think he did a great job on Mission Impossible 3 and Super 8, but they are still not without massive, massive flaws. And the less said about his Star Trek films, the better, because they do suck, as does that franchise. But it's great to see him, you know, for him, I think he used that, what a lot of other filmmakers, with the only other filmmaker that I really think that has used his mistakes to learn from is George Lucas. And he did that with his very first film, THX 1138, and he learnt, you know, and making his next films really taught him that experience. I mean, that's not to say THX 1138 is a bad movie. It is a brilliant, brilliant film. It's just, it wasn't the audience of its time. But JJ really has learnt from his experiences in terms of story and, basically story, because, yeah, and a few other things, and really refined his directing skill for this film, because this is the film, if any film he was born to make, a Star Wars film. And, look, yes, it does have a lot in common with the original Star Wars, but to be honest, when you sit there and think about it, there's no other way you could really do a new film like this without having a lot of crossovers, you know, be it, you know, we're back on another desert planet. This time it's Jakku instead of Tatooine with another young orphan, Rey instead of Luke. But that's what makes Star Wars work, you know. And again, like Marcy mentioned earlier, you know, coincidences. That's what these films are all about, you know, people's paths crossing via coincidences. And I mean, that again, it goes back to what inspired George Lucas to make these films. You know, the initial film that sparked the idea was Star Wars, The Hidden Princess, and the films of Kurosawa.
Hidden Fortress.
Hidden Fortress.
And Flash Gordon. You said The Hidden Princess.
Oh, sorry. The Hidden Fortress and Kurosawa's films. You know, they're very similar in that. And the Flash Gordons, you know. Just, yeah. And the casting and the storytelling is really well. And I think a lot of people didn't get it in the build-up to this film, you know, because people were whinging about, oh, why don't we see Luke? Why don't we see Leia? Why aren't we seeing these original characters? Unlike 99% of the rest of the world throughout 2015, I actually paid attention and listen to what JJ had to say whenever he offered any info on the film. It's still very secretive, but it was just basically telling us what the mythology of this new world is going to be in this new time frame for post the Empire, basically. And I was probably the only person that I even know that actually sat down and listened to JJ when he had to say this. And there's reasons, you know, obvious, you know, and we get it in the first sentence of the opening crawl. Luke Skywalker has vanished. This is a world that's still trying to discover what life will be like without the Empire. It's, and, you know, the resurgence of the Jedi, will it happen? And it's just rediscovering that world. And, yeah, I mean, it's just great. It's, so unlike a lot of people, when JJ had things to say to the people that were whinging, where's the original cast? There was a reason for it. The original cast aren't the main characters. They are basically taking on the supporting roles of, you know, they're basically going to be the Yodas, the Obi-Wans of this new trilogy. And we need to know who the new characters are. We need to know who Poe, Dameron, Finn, and Rey are. We need to know who these characters are, because it's going to be their story over the next two films to come out after episodes 8 and 9. And it's their journey. And as we discovered when watching the film, you know, a lot of people thought, oh, it's going to be about Finn, because some of the marketing was a bit more Finn-centric. But it was to hide the fact, and it's something that I knew from the start, this is going to be Rey's story. Rey is going to be the young Jedi that's going to come out and be trained by Luke. And that theory was accurate. And she's basically the lead of the new trilogy. And just a great film. The First Order is fantastic. I know a lot of people, when trying to describe what the First Order is, you know, they're as if the Nazis had resurfaced post-World War II. In my mind, I feel that the First Order are the Nazis. So if you were to put the Empire and the First Order in a real-life historical situation, it's almost like Germany during the early 20th centuries. The Empire is the... And I don't, you know, before you start saying, oh, he's picking on Germany, I'm Germanic, and you can kind of see this is historical influences. You know, got to remember, guys, this is fantasy. The Empire is kind of like the Imperial German, or any imperialistic empire at the turn of the early 20th century. It could be the Russian, it could be England. But in this sense, it's got a little bit more in common with Germany, because the way, when you read a little bit more into how the First Order came about, they came about when, you know, a regime was toppled, be it a good or bad one, and they came out of that. And that's almost very much similar to the rise of the Nazi Party. So I liked that.
Well, I think Hux fancies himself a bit of a Hitler.
Yeah, there's a very Hitler-esque moment with General Hux, who's very well played by Dominal Gleeson.
I don't know if that
is. He's Irish, so...
call him Dom Gleeson.
Dom Gleeson. It's fantastic. I just loved it, and I bawled my eyes out, both full of joy and sadness and just utter heartbreak. And yeah.
Well, let's get into something. A lot was said before the movie came out about Kylo Ren. So basically, people were just stupid and didn't pay attention to anything with their really dumbass theories about Kylo Ren being Luke Skywalker. But did any of us actually predict that he would be Han and Leia's son? Because I certainly didn't.
I think earlier in the year, there was a theory I heard. It was a very early prediction, but it wasn't one, because people were just obsessing because they're idiots, that he was going to be Luke or something like that. And it's like, guys, if you actually listen to what JJ has to say, he's Kylo Ren or Ben Solo.
Well, I was more inclined to think maybe he had a relation to Luke.
Yeah, I mean, he does have a connection to Luke being his nephew.
Yeah, but more like a son that went rogue. But when it's revealed, I was genuinely stunned because I did not think that was going to happen.
Mm.
But you claim to have guessed that plot point bead.
Oh, well, it was just like, you know, hearing all like different theories and stuff like that. So when it actually happened, it wasn't too much of a surprise, because I know like earlier versions of the story, it was about the Skywalker children, like a brother and sister. So I just kind of assumed, like, even though that was I knew it wasn't going to, that wasn't going to be it in the film, but I just kind of had it in the back of my mind, like, it's probably possible that, you know, Kylo Ren could be the son of someone. Like, I sort of just gravitated towards Han and Leia, because it just seemed to me like the more plausible explanation. So in that regard, it didn't really surprise me too much, and especially when at the very beginning, like, Max von Sydow says to him, "You cannot deny your family." And that's what I, like, automatically knew at that moment. It's like, yeah, he's Han and Leia's son. That's when it
I paid more attention to that, to the beginning, on the second viewing and the third viewing, whereas the first time it's like, oh my God, is this really happening? We're seeing a Star Wars movie for the first time ever. Not the first time ever, but, you know, a new one. So, yeah, but it's very much hinted at. When you watch it again, you can really pick up on that. But as far as, like, that first reveal, I was quite stunned. And the backstory, whereas Luke was training new Jedi and he was one of them and then he turned, it makes a lot of sense, being that Vader is his grandfather and that he's become obsessed with him.
And he's definitely his grandfather's son, because just like Anakin Skywalker, he likes to have temper tantrums as well.
Yeah, but I think Kylo has... Anakin don't have anything on Kylo. Kylo's the king of the tantrum.
But, that'd be awesome if he said, he's holding me back. What's up with that?
His character is what Anakin should have been. We should have seen the conflict and the anger... and the anguish, whereas they've sort of rectified that by having that him the way he is, developed the way he is. But that's how we should have seen Anakin in the prequels. So at least we kind of, it's kind of redeemed it in a way by having that character.
Yeah.
I guess, as Chris pointed out in the marketing, it looked like maybe Finn would be the main character. He is one of them, but it's Rey's story.
Yeah.
But Finn, too, is an interesting character.
Mm, Finn's has a very, very interesting story, because for the first time we really get a ground point view of what it is to be a stormtrooper. And, I mean, a lot of people have to remember, when we meet Finn, this is his first time in combat, so he gets shell shock straight up front. And so it's just a really interesting dynamic. And, you know, we find out they've got a number, like for him it's FN2187. And he's named Finn. And there's a reason why, because they never revealed any of the main characters, like Finn and Rey's last names, is because Finn doesn't have a last name. Finn had a number. He never got a name until he met Poe Dameron when he was rescuing him.
And Poe just went, FN Finn. That sounds right.
And he's like, yeah, I'll take it, man. I'll take it. Mm. So it was almost like their own little Django Unchained moment.
Yeah.
So it's really cool to see the workings of a stormtrooper. You know, you don't go in depth to the world of what it is.
But what we can gather is that the troopers now are no longer clones.
Well, no, even during the Empire, they were never clones as well. After the Clone Wars and when the Empire was
taken over, they kind of are more phased out.
Yeah, they phased them out.
To be, you know, and whether or not earlier on they were raised from birth. Here it's, we get the idea, it's like the child soldier almost. They're taking kids and making them into that.
And the idea,
but also I think earlier on would have been recruitment, because would they kind of do that with Rebels?
Yeah, is, but the thing is, at the time,
it's more hardcore now.
The time with the rise of the Empire, and this is stuff that you read into, like with the release of the Visual Dictionary a couple of days after the film, and a few other things that came to light, is discovering how the First Order resurfaced, you know. And again, this parallels it perfectly with Germany in the 20s and 30s, you know. They weren't the First Order, so the last remnants of the Empire, they weren't allowed to militarize themselves in a way, you know. Basically, their sources and for all their shipping and everything was shut down. But a mysterious leader, who's Andy Serkis's character, Supreme Leader Snoke, And I just want to quickly side point, any fanboy out there or fangirl that's saying all this other fan theory about who Snook is, Snook is Snook. There is no way he is Darth Pelagius. I mean, yeah, maybe I could, again, it's still premature to say this, but has a way different, facial and body structure to what Snook could be. And they've really actually said, guys, Snook is Snook. And even there's a nice little meme going around that's saying, what if Snook is actually Snook? You know, so just calm your tits on this whole predicting who he is. You know, yeah, he may be, but...
I think the best explanation is that...
He's just...
In the storyline, he's always been there. He is someone that probably was the puppet master behind Palpatine.
Either that, or he was someone close to Palpatine in the early years, because, you know, they have described his background. He is old enough to, like Max von Sydow's character, they were old enough to see the rise and fall of the Empire.
Mm.
And so he is a very Force-sensitive-like character that's been around for a while, but, again, someone lurking in the shadows that was probably known to Palpatine. But anyway.
But I like the idea that he was maybe pulling the strings, but I think... When you look at his face, it does look old and...
Yeah, I mean, it could be battle-scarred.
Yeah, but I think he's been twisted up because of the dark side, which we know how.
And again, because when you are on the dark side, you give yourself to full-on pain and torture. Like, Palpatine's sacrifice to the dark side was having his face melted, basically. Mm. But, you know, so the rise of the First Order, you know, perfectly mirrors the rise of the Nazis. And this is their first striking. This is them striking back and making the Empire's massive return to a galaxy that's pretty much still trying to find its way with the Senate. You know, the Senate, the New Republic and General Leia's resistance aren't on equal terms. They kind of see one or the other as... a bit more radical, and it was Leia who was investigating a little bit more into the rise of the First Order that made her aware, and that's why the Resistance has been able to fight back.
And I think a bit more. This time around too, they up the ante. They have a weapon, and we know, like, it does mirror the Death Star, but you've got to understand, these people want absolute power.
Mm.
They cannot simply just stop with something like the Death Star. They need to outdo it like crazy.
Mm. And even Poe Dameron actually compares. He goes, no, General, this was the Death Star, and you get the Death Star. And then it's like, this is Starkiller Base, and it's a freaking huge...
It's like putting a marble next to a tire.
Yeah, and Starkiller Base, for all you... true fans out there, like myself, will note that Starkiller Base is a reference to Luke Skywalker's original name, Luke Starkiller.
And the fact is that, yeah, we have in A New Hope the destruction of Alderaan, but this time, because we're seeing their rise, they cannot simply destroy a planet. They've destroyed the New Republic in one go. They destroyed a whole system.
Mm. They destroyed, because in this, post-Empire, the New Republic, basically, rather than, Coruscant is no longer the capital. So, for just certain periods of time, the Senate moves to 5 different planets that have their own Senates, and they host it. And so all the Senators have to up and go and this and that. And they, you know, that's what Marcy said, they're just... display of power is to wipe out the star system that the New Republic is currently sitting on. And that's their, you know, we don't need to see Alderaan, we don't need to see those people, but you know this is a shit kicker, and this is a shit kicker of even greater scales by the fact that they take out the fleet, they take out the main planet, they take out its moons, and this is like, yeah, this is the Death Star. Forget about that. This is true power. This is true evil and true power.
And in the destruction of the base, you know, it's not like A New Hope where they've got the plans. This is the mission for the whole movie. Yeah. This isn't the mission in this movie, but they need to stop it because the Resistance themselves have been targeted.
Yeah.
And they're only really successful because they have somebody who was part of the First Order, who has that knowledge, and they only really can manage to do it because they give them an opening with the, you know, detonating the stuff at that section. So
rather than being going from rescuing someone from the base to then having the last stand, this has the, you know, those two combined together where they have a little ground team going in to discover, you know, to try and disable the shields and whatever, and then they have the aerial assault happening at the same time. And that's a common, when you look at all the Star Wars films and some of the major battles, be it Endor, Naboo, they're the key type of thing. That's the key structure of those films. And in the middle of that, you have an epic lightsaber battle. And this lightsaber battle was one of the most epic of all. And I had two theories about what was going to happen in it, and the one that I was always leaning towards actually happened, because this film isn't about Luke Skywalker. Sure, it's it's about the search for Luke Skywalker, but that's not what the whole thing should be about. The thing is about, that's the Kickstarter. That's saying, kickstarting the journey of Rey and Finn and all the other characters. And then you go off and do your other things, because this it's about them discovering who they are. You know, when Rey's captured on Starkiller Base, she's discovering her own Force powers. And they're all discovering what other skills they can do in this and that. Whereas, you know, the research can resume once they've defeated this threat, which is the Starkiller Base. And that theory was during the fight, because I had always thought Luke might pop in the final fight in the forest, and he would be the one to call the lightsaber to him.
That's what my thought was.
But it went to Rey. And I think even in that last trailer, anyone that thought Rey wasn't going to be a Jedi, your views would have changed, because that trailer is very much about her. And even as the film goes along, you realise, yeah, Rey is the Force-sensitive one here. Whether or not she's the daughter of Skywalker, like, my prediction is, I mean, when she meets Luke right at the end, there's a moment that he does recognise her, because, you know, where he's hiding is somewhere she imagined in her mind, because when interrogated by Kylo Ren, he describes a lake with islands on it, and he's on a planet that is just a tiny little island.
I think the theories of...
So he knows her, at least.
That, yeah, her
otherwise
being the daughter.
Yeah, it would make sense if it's a daughter, but also...
I kind of like the idea she's a Kenobi.
There is that theory flowing around, but to be honest, I think his acknowledgement of Rey is not only, wow, someone's found me, it's time. I mean, at first, it is time for him to return.
He knew that would happen, too.
He knew that would happen
because
Luke failed. And that's why, to be honest, Luke is such a great character, because, you know, he went through so much shit in the first films, and now he had his chance to rebuild, you know, the Jedi Order, and he failed. It's not his fault, you know, he had his nephew turn to the dark side and destroy it, and he feels so responsible, not only because it was his apprentice, but the fact that it was a member of his own family. So he was suffering, you know, it's almost the reverse of what happened with his father, you know. And that's why he hid himself. So him acknowledging Rey was, it's time for me to return, but maybe because... Rey, I think, would be a little bit younger. I reckon when she was dropped on Jakku, she would have been the time when Kylo betrayed him, and Kylo would have been much older by then, because he is actually mid-20s, I've read, mid-30s, because it's almost 30 years after. And I reckon she was either Luke's daughter, and he's hiding her, or it's she was a surviving Padawan, and he had hid her. Something like that. I mean, there's all types of theories, but, I mean, that's questions that we'll answer when Rian Johnson unleashes Episode 8 upon us in a year and a half. But,
give me a time machine so I can watch the movie already.
Well, look, I mean, we still have the anthology films to look forward to. We've got Rogue One out at the end of this year. Which, to be honest, out of all the anthology films that Disney has planned, is the only interesting one, because the other two, at the moment, going to be a Han Solo one or a Boba and a Boba Fett one. And we don't need to know about those characters. I mean, they're in the film, so we don't need more of them.
I want to know where my Bosk movie is.
Yeah.
The coolest character to appear on screen
for 2 seconds.
For like 5 seconds, and he should have his own movie, his own TV show, something. Because he's the best. He is the Bosk man.
And it should be titled Who's the Bosk?
Like a Bosk.
But yeah, look, it's a great film that's got lots of memorable moments. I love the movie.
Everything about it is awesome. Yeah. I have no faults with the movie.
No.
My
only fault with this film isn't about the film itself. It's just more, again, about the fandoms and people coming out with their crazy theories and just, you know, it's going to bring out all these people that will jump on the bandwagons for all the wrong reasons.
But it also pisses me off, like, that article, oh, here's these plot holes. No, you weren't fucking paying attention to the movie. They're not plot holes, you dickhead.
Yeah.
It's shit like that that pisses me off, or people just hating on it to hate on it. Or, you know,
and that's a problem.
Or
that's
getting,
what these...
or hating it because of people that love it. Like, go fuck yourself, honestly. Yeah. I cut you off again.
No, that's right. But that's what happens with Star Wars. And anything as big as Star Wars, you'll always draw that negativity. But to go back to the positives, there are a lot of great cameos in this film.
Daniel Craig
is. A stormtrooper who they've all dubbed JB007, which nobody knew about until Simon Pegg confirmed it later. We got Simon Pegg in there as an alien that looks like Bede.
Oh, shut up.
We've got JJ's former composer, Michael Giacchino, as a stormtrooper in there. We've got the three main actors from The Raid 2 in there. Who, you know, again, they don't get to...
Tell that to Candy Club.
Yeah. They don't get to kick ass like they
probably
would expect
cut
them
out,
to.
I would say.
But it's nice to see them in there. I mean, and that's what that role is. It's a cameo. It's not like, you know, and again, that's the whole thing with Star Wars. Those characters will become popular no matter what.
Just like the Stormtrooper traitor.
Yeah, like the news, the one that cries out traitor, it's the one with the electric right stick.
He was badass.
He's awesome. He was more badass than Phasma, who was everyone thought was going to become the Boba Fett of this new trilogy. But, I mean, look, to be honest, she was given enough screen time and did
she's
enough.
She's a character to be used in the future.
Yeah. It's not like, here's a bunch of new characters, let's use them and then maybe kill them off, which was one of the faults of The Phantom Menace. You know, they gave a really cool character, they showed what he could do, and then that was the end of it. With Phasma, they gave us... you know, a couple of scenes with her, and that was all that was needed, because otherwise it would be the Captain Phasma show, where this, we needed to know about Rey and Finn, we needed to follow them, we needed to care about them, and it's full of laughs, there's jokes aplenty, even
in
some serious...
It's quite humorous, and BB-8 is awesome. BB-8
is adorable. I mean, look, one of the best scenes... in this movie, not only does he give a thumbs up with a little lighter, but Kylo Ren has a little tantrum, and on the outside you see sparks flying out of the room, and these two stormtroopers walk by and stop, and they're just like, yep, fuck this shit, I'm out of here, and they just back away slowly.
Like, yep, he's having one of his tantrums again.
So even in some really serious moments, there's absolute brilliant comedy just nicely fitted in there, but this film will tear your heart out. It broke me, like, when Kylo kills his father.
I think it was kind of obvious that it was going to be him, whereas a lot of people thought maybe it was Chewie.
People thought it was going to be Chewie because they thought they could see him. But to be honest, it makes sense that it was Han, because Han really doesn't... Han's useful to the plot in a way, but he's not someone that's going to distract the whole
story. I think his story arc's been told.
It has been, yeah. And it made sense that he killed him because, again, Star Wars is all about fathers and sons. And this is about, you know, and again, what's your commitment to the dark side of the Force? For Kylo Ren, or Ben Solo, it was about killing his father. And...
by killing his father, he's not feeling the pull of
that was because the light. There's a scene there where he's talking to Vader's charred helmet and he goes, I feel the pull to the light. Show me the darkness. And this was his commitment to the dark side, as well as removing any doubt that he could be turned back to the light side. And when, just as the scene's about to happen, you can tell something's going to happen. And no matter how many times you see it, you're on edge. It's very well put together, and it kills you and pulls you in.
And don't think about it or you start crying.
Anyway.
Lee, do you have anything to add to this massive conversation?
There's a lot of things I do agree, and some things I don't necessarily agree with. Like, and I'll explain why. Like, I think it's good that Phasma is going to be, like, in the next one. Like, that's been confirmed. And, you know, because I'm a huge fan of Gwendolyn Christie. And to be honest, I thought she was wasted as in this film. Like, and I guess it's, again, with the whole, you know, with her being cast as this, like, really cool chrome kind of stormtrooper, you kind of expect, oh, they're going to do something awesome with her, and unfortunately, she's not given much to do. And I think it's good that at least we know she's coming back, because, and she'll have even more of a motivation to go after Finn now, because she got thrown into a trash compactor and all that type of stuff. So in that regard, and also the Raid guys, like, yeah, they're cameos, but I kind of felt like I wish there was more of them. Maybe they might come back at some point, who knows, but I have a feeling like there was kind of more of them, because if you watch the credits, that is like...
I think that it was cut out, because at least 20, 25 minutes got cut.
Yeah, because I think there must have been a fight scene or something that involved them, because JJ kept saying, oh, the guys were amazing with their fighting and all that type of stuff, and they did a lot of stuff in the movie, and even in the credits it says additional fight choreography from them. And when you watch the thing, it's like, where's this fight scene that they're talking about? It must have got cut out of the movie, but I do think, though, and this is kind of more not really about the film itself, but it's more about kind of reactions from both sides of the debate when it comes to this one, from both people who love this film and people who do not like this film and all that type of stuff. It's kind of, I guess it's kind of like, I guess in a way, I kind of, like, I do think there are flaws in the film, and I think that, and it's something that does stop the film from me saying, like,
let's put it this way. Every single film ever made has flaws.
Yeah, I understand
there
that.
There is nothing that is ever, ever going to be 100% perfect.
Yeah, I can understand that, but I guess for me personally, like, having it, and this was kind of the main kind of issue, and I still had this issue, and it's been with me ever since, even after watching the film a few times now, is that I know we kind of talked about, like, you guys don't mind that it kind of sort of follows the same kind of structure of A New Hope, but for me, I think it kind of, at least structure-wise, like, I think all the characters and all that, like, there's some great new stuff that we haven't seen before that is pretty kick-ass, but when you sort of look at it from, for me, it's personally from a structural standpoint, like, where the story goes and stuff like that, it doesn't really sort of offer you anything new. And I can see why some people work.
But that's the thing. It does. There has not been a Star Wars movie where the whole mystery and what kicks it off is, like, the journey to see someone.
Yeah, I mean,
and the fact that this person is in it right at the end doesn't say anything.
And the fact that he says nothing.
He doesn't say anything. Well, it ends the way none of the movies have ended. It gives us a lead female character who is actually very smart. She's very intelligent. She's very independent. And it doesn't need to do a hell of a lot of explaining to say that. We can see that she's been self-sufficient from a very young age.
Yeah, I have no complaints with
you
that.
You know, Luke didn't have any of that at all. He almost felt almost coddled by his aunt and uncle. There's so many differences, and I think that's what people are just not wanting to look further into. And I think that you might be one of them, B.
I'm just saying, like, I mean, everyone knows Star Wars. We've seen all the films. I'm just saying, like, it would have been, I probably would have liked the movie even, yeah, not to say, I still think it's a great film, don't get me wrong. I just feel like, for me personally, I kind of wish JJ didn't have to kind of reuse the structure of A New Hope. He could have just, I mean, this is Star Wars.
They use it, but it's still completely different in a lot of ways.
I think it's mainly like the characters and some of the twists and turns within the story that make it feel fresh, but structurally it's still follows it. And I'm not saying it's
still very different. Look, for example, in A New Hope, is there anything at all like them going to a planet because they need to see someone? There isn't.
Well,
the movie starts off on Tatooine. They get there. They go on the Millennium Falcon. Then they're on the Death Star. And then from the Death Star, they go to the Rebellion. And then they go to battle at the Death Star. This one has them go from Jakku to the Maz planet.
They're going to
the Resistance. And there's not like that. You can argue that the Maz stuff is similar to the Cantina, but it's completely fucking different.
Well, that's what I mean. Like,
there has never been a vision like what we've seen that Rey has from the lightsaber.
I'm not saying that there isn't stuff in there.
But your theory is flawed.
Just like this movie. Oh, snap.
But it is so different.
This shit just got real, fellas.
I respect Reed. I can understand where he's coming from, but I just think he's not letting himself further into it.
He's got to give himself fully to the dark.
He's not letting in the Force.
Reed, just let it in.
No way, man. I know.
I can understand because, say, Attack of the Clones, it does its own thing. You've got a Jedi being a detective, you've got clones, you've got bloody things that takes a while to understand.
Like them as much because
and I think it's just going back to what makes it fun. It's why the TV show Rebels works, because it sticks to that small group. And, yeah, the planet they're on happens to be desert. Why? Because that's a theme in it.
Yeah, I know that. But the
planet's a desert.
No, it makes sense because it's why Luke was never been able to have been found by the Imperials, because not only is Tatooine on the Outer Rims, but they would, you know, it's a desert planet.
Well, actually, in Rebels,
why would anyone? They've
got Imperials there.
Yeah, but Tatooine has Imperials as well. Constant presence. It's controlled by the Hutt. And Jakku's even better. Jakku's an even better place, so it makes sense that Rey has a connection, be it Luke's daughter or a former apprentice or whatever. It makes sense to put her on Jakku, because when you look at the history of Jakku, it's even better than, even greater than...
Well, there's fucking nothing there.
Not only that, but it's a graveyard. In the very last battle of the Imperial War, of the Civil War, of the days of the Empire... wasn't the Battle of Endor. It was the Battle of Jakku, because the last pockets of the Empire went there, and you see all the ships scattered around the planet, and they basically bombarded the shit out of it, and the fact that that was where the Empire was defeated, and it's basically a ship graveyard, that's why people don't want to go there. You find very even smaller settlements than on Tatooine, like Unkar's junkyard, basically. And it makes it even harder to find someone who's force sensitive, you know, the
Sith. Well, they didn't even think about looking there to go to the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
We realize they found it so quickly is because they've been looking for the fucking thing.
Yeah. And again, Chewie makes the comment and he goes, we should have checked there.
It's like, we should have checked there, and Chewie's like,
Chewie's
Yeah, we find out Chewie's a bit of a pimp with the ladies. And that, folks, was not in the other movies. Sorry, we completely just shut you out, babe.
Indeed you did.
My dinner with Jar Jar. Sorry, The Simpsons is on and they're at the cinema and the movie's playing and one of them was my dinner with Jar Jar. But yeah, I can understand where you're coming from, but I think you need to look further into it.
I don't necessarily agree, but I'll think about it.
Attention viewers, you just watch Bede get put in his place.
No, I'm just saying, like, I'm trying to say about... Well, if you let me... if you don't interrupt me, I can... Well, if you try not to interrupt me, I can explain, like, one more
thing. Really?
Yes.
My middle name is Interrupt When People Talk. No, I'll let you go. Go on.
I'm just saying, I'm just saying, I know what you're doing. You're being kind of a dick now. But I'm just saying, though, like, I mean, here's the thing. I can see why they kind of went back to the sort of I'm not going to say the entire film is like I'm not going to say it's a remake of A New Hope. I'm just saying it sort of borrows some of the similar structure in regard. But I'm just saying in a way that, for me, I mean, we've seen all the Star Wars films. I mean, I'm just saying it would have been better if they didn't have to follow, at least at times, follow too closely to that structure. I'm just saying, or maybe start it off that way and maybe go in a different direction. There's a lot of new stuff there in terms of characters and some of the backstory and whatnot. I'm just saying that for me personally, I think it would have been even better if they didn't have to resort to that. But that's just
If they had a completely different structure, it could have sucked. You don't know.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like that's the thing I kind of give respect to the prequels, though, because they didn't have to resort to doing that. Like, they each, like you said before, Attack of the Clones, why I kind of give that film credit. It's because for half of that movie, it's a detective story, in a way. I'm not saying it...
But the fact is, as much as I like the prequels, that one just gets boring.
Well, I understand that, but I'm just saying...
And this one isn't boring.
I understand that, but to me...
Phantom Menace changes it up. It's still got a lot of similarities.
Yeah, but it's sort of...
I don't think that is boring.
Well, I understand that. I'm just saying
that... I was off. Sorry, I'm interrupting you.
Just with what a lot of people have even said in the following up with it, they've said there probably wasn't any other way to do it. I mean, I've spoken to people and they said I would have done it the same way if I was doing it. Because I don't think there was any other way to reboot. Because this is a sequel, this isn't a prequel, you know. The prequels had to be their own thing in a way, you know. Yeah, they probably would have been better had they followed a similar structure as the originals. But this was a sequel, and to kind of get that, you've kind of got and that's what Star Wars is all about, you know. George Lucas basically did what Tarantino does long before Tarantino even probably thought of it, and he did it a lot better than, and I'm just saying this, he did it a lot better than Tarantino. He can be a bit of a mess.
He pretty much takes the structure of the Hidden Fortress.
Yeah.
No one's freaking whinging about that. Just saying.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, with George Lucas, he used those influences and created this whole new thing that we had never seen before. And, I mean, I'm sure JJ had his influences and all that, but you can tell, like, it is no secret that Star Wars is his all-time favorite film, and I think that was kind of the main influence he looked at.
They said that it purposely does follow A New Hope in certain ways, but that it is quite different.
Yeah, but I like
that familiar structure that fans are familiar with and can relate to.
Yeah, I can understand that, but for me personally, as a fan of Star Wars, I just would like to have seen something different. And that's why I'm really looking forward to Rian Johnson's take on Episode 8, because I know, because he's a great writer and director. I would even argue even better than JJ, and I can't wait to see what he does.
But then if it takes a dark turn like Empire, you're going to get the same thing, whether or not it's intentional.
I mean, if it takes a dark turn...
It's following the same structure.
Well, I mean, if it doesn't... If it's not basically, like, you know, borrowed too many elements from Empire, and if it's just its own thing, that I will give it the credit it deserves. But if it doesn't, that's... But that's just me. Like, I just feel like it's Star Wars. It's a huge universe. I mean, we have... That's what... We show us something new. I mean, not new in the, like... I mean, there is a lot of new stuff in this film, but I meant... Story and structure wise, I mean, I can see why they did that for this one, and I know that JJ pretty much, they had the script, JJ didn't really think much of it, and they had to quickly scramble to write a new one.
I wouldn't say that quickly, because to be honest, when you look at what was in existence for post-Jedi with the Dark Horse comics, Yeah, some of it was interesting, but it was, to be honest, as a very, as a massive, massive Star Wars fan as I am, it wasn't very interesting. And I think that was the path that Michael Arnott, the original scriptwriter, was kind of going down, because, you know, George was giving him suggestions and it was this and that. And when they kind of read it, it's like, and again, you can't kind of stick to what's already in existence. And to be honest, I'm as sad as it is, with Disney owning Star Wars, Lucasfilm now, that they kind of, you know, made everything that Dark Horse done almost in the comic book world nonchalant, like non-existent in a way. I am glad that they've gotten rid of what happened post-Jedi in the Dark Horse universe, because it wasn't that, again, this is my opinion, it wasn't that great. I mean, I liked the idea, the Children of Solo and that in that one. They were good, but I think there was something missing. You know, there wasn't anything like what we see in The Force Awakens with Ben, that turmoil. I think it's nice to see the reversal that, you know, Han was, and all these characters were there to witness, you know, one of their own turn to the dark side in a way that should have been handled really well. And again, like I've said before, the way to kind of, you kind of have to follow that structure that's there in a way, not follow it to the T, which I don't think they do. I think, you know, it's got it in spirit, that it does that to just restart this journey, that we're going to get. And, you know, yes, it's going into Empire territory with Rey finding the old Jedi Master that is Luke that will train her, but they could go a very different way, because they've described this, the next script that Ryan has written, as very, very wacky and very, very weird. So we will go in another direction, and I just think it's unfair for people to go on and on about, oh, it's just a carbon copy of this and that. It's like, well, your argument's invalid, because what about every movie ever made?
Yeah, but we're talking about Star Wars here, not every other movie ever made.
Yes, but Star Wars is brilliant, and I will not hear a bad thing against it. But look, it again, like I said, it needed this type of thing, because you are giving a kickstart to a new generation's journey, not only audience members, but the characters, more importantly. You've got to give them something, and I think this was the way they went, because, I mean, you know, bringing Lawrence Kasdan on to co-write with JJ, I think, was the best idea they could have ever had. You know, he's someone that's got a history of Star Wars, but the fact that he had a massive gap, he had the 30-year gap of, you know, he wasn't there with the prequels. He and George basically parted ways for 30 years. I'm not sure 100% on that history between them after Jedi, what happened, but it's him coming back. So in a way, he had a chance, which George Lucas never had. Lawrence had the chance to sit back and probably watch them and watch them properly, and same with the prequels. But George never had that chance. George never took a break. George never sat there and really went, okay, let's think about this for a second. Lawrence, I think, had that chance. And, yeah, they were able to just create something really fun, really enjoyable. It wasn't fan-pleasing. It wasn't this. It was just a really good movie. Fun action, great. Oh, at that lightsaber finale, it was like watching, you know, a samurai battle in the snow from Gyokin. It was just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. And for those who think it's, again, this is what infuriated me, the fact that people were whinging or complaining about, oh, how could Finn and Rey know how to use a lightsaber? Well, here's the answer for that, people, because like I said earlier, like probably 2 hours ago when we started this podcast.
Well, Finn used it earlier in the movie. Sorry.
Like I mentioned 2 hours ago at the start of this podcast, I actually listened when JJ had things to say. And one of those many, many things was the First Order, you know, yes, lightsabers have been around for a while, but they actually started to train their troopers in melee combat like that. I mean, the Empire would have done that as well, but this time they really taught them, and that's why they have, you know, the riot gear sticks. The way he moves, you know, they move with, they battle with that weapon is very similar to a lightsaber movements. So they would have trained it. So Finn was part of that, because as we've discovered in a new book and in the, well, that TR, Adar, and Finn were actually squad mates, which makes, you know, him recognise.
That's why I was so pissed with it.
Yeah. But, so Finn would have known how to use it, and he can adapt what he was taught to another weapon. It's the same with Rey. You watch her use a staff and kick the shit out of those guys. She just modified it down to, and you watch the movements that she uses the lightsaber. She doesn't use it like someone else would. She's very stabby and thrusty, like she would do with a spear. And it's the same. And again, the argument goes with Kylo Ren's use of the lightsaber, and it also goes with why his lightsaber looks the way it is. He's inexperienced. A lot of, you know, people think that Kylo Ren is a very experienced member of the, and he knows how to use the Force. Yeah, he knows how to do a lot of mind tricks and mind interrogation and things like that very well. But he, and Snook actually says this at the end of the film, he's like, it's time to complete his training. He hasn't got a lot of training. He's still very, very early days with his training. I mean, he isn't an expert swordsman. He's built a very shoddy lightsaber, and that's why it looks the way it does, because nobody sat down and said, hey, Ben, this is how we build a lightsaber. He's like, ooh, I know how to do it. I'll just, it's okay. It'll work. So he's still, again, it makes sense that their fight was on equal ground because of those.
Well, and don't forget, he's injured as well.
That too, he was injured.
He leaves Finn for dead, so I don't get what movie people are watching when they say this.
And his priority was to get the lightsaber because, you know, it was his uncle. Oh, and grandfather's too, sorry. So, yeah.
Beads, not with us, is
it? I'm here, I'm just listening.
Okay, well, yeah, I think it's time to wrap it up, maybe?
Yep.
Bede, what's your rating?
I keep going back and forth. It's either a 4 or 4.5. I just keep going back and forth. It's like a 4.5 when I watch it, but when I sort of sit back and think about it afterwards, it's probably a 4. So at the moment, I would have to say I give it both those ratings for the Type B.
Oh, mine's a 5 out of 5. It's my number one movie of last year, so. And B, Chris.
I give it a 5 out of 5. It's not only the best movie of 2015, but it's truly one of the most amazing films I've ever seen. Anyway, and I know there's been a lot of great films that I've watched over the last couple of years, be it Only God Forgives, The Raid, and stuff like, you know.
But it's fucking Star Wars,
I don't think I've laughed and cried throughout in a film like this, on the scale like this. Like, yeah.
Although you did cry in Jurassic World.
Jurassic World was yeah, I think, a stepping stone of what this was to be.
I have to say this.
Star Wars.
I hate to admit this. I did not cry during Star Wars. Just
I hate you. Dude, that man is not a fan. If you do not cry whilst watching this film, you are not a fan.
But I'm a man. I'm a manly man. Oh, yeah. Just say. I mean, But anyway, so I continue, Marcy.
Oh, no, that was it, I think.
Yep. I guess
a wrap.
I guess we're, Marcy, where can people find this on the internet this week?
Supermarcy.com. You can find Chris dressing up as Kylo Ren and having fits around the house.
Funny.
I'll be chasing my bunny around, who's a little naughty girl. supermarcy.com, facebook.com/sm.com/superpodcast. Find me at twitter.com/supermarcy. You can like our other Twitter pages. Twitter.com/awkwardpauses1 and I need to get on it a bit more. And Werner Herzog Reviews, which is at Werner H Reviews. And Bede, what about you?
You can find me pretty much just giving out like peep scavengers like half portions on a daily basis. But
one half portion.
Exactly. But you could also find...
Even he admits he's on Carl Platt.
No, I'm just saying it. I am definitely not him. I am not. But anyways, sorry, this has caught me off guard. Also, you can find me at my Twitter page at twitter.com/bjamai, or my Facebook page at facebook.com/bjamai, or my fan page at facebook.com/terribleaussie. And of course, you can find my weekly writings at supermarcy.com. I took a break over the last few weeks, but I definitely have a lot of stuff coming up very soon.
Yeah, hopefully there'll be lots of awesome stuff coming this year.
Indeed.
And you won't find me on the internet because the internet is evil, boring. Instead, I will be hiding on an island out in the middle of nowhere, waiting for Daisy Ridley to present me with a lightsaber.
And being in silence.
Exactly. I don't even need to say anything to people.
Well, but let's put it, I have to say this, though. I think the reason, like, we always say, why is Luke barely in the trailers while that? Well, his entire screen time in the movie would have, it's only like 20 seconds.
And
so yeah.
Second billing.
Exactly.
I think he had first billing.
No, second.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That'd have been hilarious if he had first billing and was only in it for 20 seconds. Just saying.
But yeah.
Anyways.
I will be, at the moment, I've been doing a lot of, I was mostly doing it for The Force Awakens, a bit of a countdown. At the moment, we're counting down till Rogue One, which, as I said earlier, is the most interesting of the three spin-off Star Wars films that's coming out.
It's got Mads Mikkelsen in it, so yeah.
It's got Mads Mikkelsen, and it's directed by Gareth Edwards, and it's out on the 16th of December.
Edwards or Evans?
Edwards.
Which one? I get confused.
I think Gareth
Edwards is the man who made Monsters and God.
Okay.
Yeah, I think Gareth Evans should do a Star Wars, like his own Star Wars spin-off, and just have, like, the Candy Club guys in there.
Yeah. And the other thing I'm building up for, which is only a few short months away, is Dawn of Justice, which is going to rock the world.
So, as long as it's better than Man of Steel. Race of Silent, because you freaking masturbate to that movie, the both of you.
Anyway.
All right, guys. Catch you on the flip side.
See everyone.
See you later. May the force be with you.
Always.